Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. Couple of things before we take a look at the situation in Libya. What if you were in the middle of a disaster and the government gave you $20,000 to help you out, and then a few years later, the government said, oops, we made a mistake, give us back our $20,000. The government giveth, the government taketh away. It's a real story of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and we're going to talk about it about 25 minutes from now. The government wants some of its disaster money back. What does that mean to some people who are affected? But we're going to begin by contemplating the situation in Libya, the civilian crisis there, and also the military situation. Let's begin with a couple of voices out of Libya. The first one is Brigadier General Claudio Gabellini. He's a NATO general talking about the success of the military operation.
Since the 2nd of May, we have destroyed over 30 military targets in the Misrata area, including a dozen main battle tanks, 3 rocket launcher systems, 3 self-propelled artillery pieces, and 15 ammunition storage sites.
A NATO general there talking about success militarily in the city of Misrata, where we understand this morning the airport is under control of the Libyan rebels. But remember, that NATO general is doing the United Nations bidding. On March 17th, the United Nations passed the Security Council resolution that authorized the NATO no-fly zone. Listen to another voice from the United Nations.
The longer the current situation continues, the graver the humanitarian situation will become.
That's Valerie Amos, Undersecretary for Humanitarian Affairs at the United Nations, in remarks before the Security Council. So the UN approved this operation, and other offices within the UN are worried about the civilian situation getting worse. What does this say about the structure of the United Nations and its ability to deal with conflicts like the one going on in Libya right now? Joining us is Gene Krasno, Distinguished Fellow of International Security Studies at Yale University, lecturer at the City College of New York. She teaches courses on the UN and international politics. She joins us from Connecticut. Gene Krasno, good morning.
Good morning to you, John.
Now, I'm talking to you sort of as a lay kind of observer of the situation here. It seems in this particular crisis, it's not unprecedented, but in this crisis particularly, the humanitarian side of the UN is speaking in one voice, and the sort of Security Council side of the UN is speaking in quite another voice. It seems to me that creates complications for the civilians in Libya. Explain why one side of the UN maybe doesn't have much clout over the other side.
Well, that's a complex issue, and in the UN's relationship with NATO, there's some interesting history there, because the UN was created in 1945, right after the end of the Second World War.
Sure.
And NATO was created a few years later, actually, to protect Western Europe from the Soviet Union. And so with NATO, even though the UN says if a regional organization is going to use force, it has to get its authorization from the Security Council. But NATO was never really going to do that, because the Soviet Union sat on the council with veto power. And, of course, NATO would not subject itself to the Soviet veto if it was going to be defending against the Soviet Union. So there's tension within the UN and the Security Council and the history of its relationship to NATO. And so even in the creation of the no-fly zone in the resolution 1973, the Soviet Union, now Russia, abstained. So it did allow that resolution to go forward, but did not support it, along with China and a few other countries, Germany notably as well.
Right.
So we already have that particular issue going on underneath. And then the other issue is that the agencies of the UN that carry out the humanitarian assistance, the Refugee Agency, UNHCR, the World Food Program, UNICEF, and the Human Rights Agency,
sure,
all have separate governing structures and separate budgets. So they operate under their own decision-making and under their own schedules and under their own budget.
And very much subservient to, it seems, the Security Council. I'm wondering if the Libyan operation suggests that an alternative structure to the way the UN operates today might be if the UN approves an operation like the NATO no-fly zone in Libya, that other agencies at the UN, particularly when the humanitarian crisis gets grave, can, you know, authorize the Security Council to impose a ceasefire or something like that. Right now, it seems the humanitarian agencies are utterly at the mercy, not only of NATO, but even the Security Council.
Well, in a sense, that's true, because the Security Council, once it passes a resolution, that is international law. And so everyone has to abide by that Security Council resolution. If any of the agencies were to come to the Security Council, they might ask for that, but they would not necessarily get it. So they have to coordinate the response to the, you know, humanitarian crisis that is a part of the, conflict
sure.
right
but,
now.
But the particular
but there
irony
is going to be a crisis anyway, because the resolution was passed right on the eve of the fall of Benghazi. If Benghazi would have fallen at that time, the refugee flow to Tunisia, Egypt, and then also into Europe would have been an absolute crisis. So this humanitarian crisis was going to happen anyway. Idea of the no-fly zone was to try to ameliorate that part of the refugee crisis.
Exactly. But the Security Council resolution, and before we go, we'll sort of leave it here. The Security Council resolution calls for protecting civilians. It seems to me there's a peculiar kind of perverse irony in the fact that the humanitarian agencies are acting as though they're unable to protect civilians while the operation is going on.
Right, because they become a part of the conflict if they're on the ground in the middle of the crisis. So that does become a problem. They are trying to get in to provide food, to deal with refugees coming in on these very rickety, overcrowded boats, but they can't always get in close enough to shore or into the ports to be able to assist with that because they're in the middle of a conflict.
All right. I think, you know, that underscores what we really talked about at the beginning of this segment, and that is that the longer the current situation continues, and that's what the humanitarian affairs side of the UN is saying, the worse the humanitarian situation will become and the greater the challenge for these rickety agencies that you're already talking about with very, very limited political power. Gene Krasno is Distinguished Fellow of International Security Studies at Yale University. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you.